Good evening. Let's do introductions around.
Wendy. Britt.
Jeffrey. Chris.
Dawn.
Ron.
Ritu.
Cassandra.
Kat.
Jennifer.
Paul.
And Delaware.
Kisayo, you're back from Japan?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I saw a picture from Bob on Facebook. Very nice. So we're in the Lanka, a very interesting Lanka. And what I think is that we're on page 149. Does that make sense to you all? About the two kinds of knowing. These three little sections are getting close to what is trying to be expressed in a new way. It's getting close to the five skandhas about our own body and what our body is, what our mind is, how it is that we take in information and process it, and what we do with the information that we process. So when we say all five skandhas are empty, they're pointing to the truth that they don't arise from anywhere and they don't go anywhere. It's just a continual experience from birth to death, moment by moment. The place that we got stuck is what they're calling in here the Vijnanas. That the first five skandhas are the first five Vijnanas. So after that, you get different kinds of consciousness. You get the consciousness of conceptual consciousness, which is the thing that they're talking about all the way through here. It's the consciousness that projects. And based on those projections, then we create another consciousness wakes up and connects and supports the Aliya Vijnana, the whole barn full of ideas and experiences that we have, to which we on which we base our projections. So as soon as we carry the projections in any way that we do, It starts up a whole process that isn't necessary. And that's the message of this whole thing, is that it's not necessary to do that. So the two kinds of knowing are the knowing that examines things just as they are. Don't have to name it, but just experience it as it comes through the body-mind. And the other one is attachment to all the characteristics that we project on things, that we not only garden, we are attached to the garden, you could say, or we... whatever we experience, we can lay all kinds of ideas and emotions. But originally, there were no ideas and emotions on it. There's just experience. And allowing our ears to take in not just the sound, but everything that we think and know and feel about sound. And that's projecting onto the sound a person, my own experience, which then is the original deception, you could say, how we deceive ourselves. But if we examine the characteristics of the self, especially, it's easy because we walk around all day long with the self and practice it as well. It says here: solid, moist, warm, moving. Reasoning, it's got all these characteristics. So when I'm experiencing myself, I'm trying to think of a good example was when the man who's revamping my bathroom came in and gave me some bad news. And I had a choice at that point. The thing didn't fit, and he could get it fit. He could make another one, but it would cost a lot of money, and blah, blah, blah. And I kind of started to think, oh, what shall I do? And then I thought, you know, it's just a thing. I can put all kinds of things into it and make it a disaster or an annoyance or one more thing to deal with, or, you know, all of those things. Or, why me? Why is this happening to me? This is terrible. And I laughed at myself because it really doesn't matter. I think when you're young, it matters more because it's harder to see how little it matters. But at my age, really nothing matters because, after all, there's nothing left, or so little left that there's no point in getting carried away. And what this is saying is there's no point in getting carried away, that we hurt ourselves when we do that. That there's an ignorance and a foolishness in it that actually gets in the way of our seeing the Alaya Vijnana as it really is. Seeing life, all the accumulations of our ideas and all of our projections, they're all settled and churning in our mind, to see them as they are. That's when samsara turns into nirvana. Things don't change. The mind changes. Things don't change, but consciousness does. When we don't have to do that seventh, seventh consciousness that is grabbing onto things and owning things and identifying with them and projecting onto them. So even the silliness of it's being my bathroom is really absurd. It's not my bathroom. It's my responsibility for a little while, but it's not mine. So this is persuading us, trying to persuade us to pay close attention to how we approach the world, how we take in the world, and how we understand it, how we know, either from the self point of view or from the whole thing. So they go on to say that despite projection, four elements, earth, air, fire, and water, and elemental forms, all of our senses, of our mind, our own mind, their external existence does not exist. The three realms are devoid of existence and their forms and their possibilities, including any kind of self. The self is an idea. So that when people tell me they're worried about their ego, the ego doesn't exist. That's what makes it the ego. So the more we're concerned about our ego, the more we're concerned with something that's not there, here. So what we worry about is the wrong thing. We're worrying about a not existing thing. So what should we worry about? So why is the wisdom that we exercise, that we carry, knows this? In some way, we always know that forms are illusory, that our life is a dream or a shadow. One of the first little songs that we learn as children is row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream. So they say you should get rid of projections. The realm of Buddha knowledge appears the same as the projection of the skandhas. You should get rid of projections, then proclaim the teaching of detachment and use your higher powers to help and protect all beings. So that's the other message of this material. That what we're trying to understand and what we're trying to an act isn't for our own sake only, but it's for the sake of all beings. So then he brings up the four kinds of nirvana that different groups have proposed. There's this kind of nirvana and that kind of nirvana. Some say it's putting out a fire, and some say it's a glorious golden light, and some say it's the eastern world. And Buddha's saying, reject the four kinds of nirvana. End the continuity of self-existence. Buddha teaches that when conceptual consciousness, which Kogan calls the messenger boy, it takes in the information that our senses give us and then tells the consciousness to think about it and choose about it and carry on about it and store it away as one more confirmation of the self. So this kind of self-existence, Buddha says conceptual consciousness ceases, the consciousness that projects. That's what we call nirvana. So these vijñanas are tricky, but if it's laid out in here in a different way, saying that if the number six is dropped, and that's the conceptual consciousness, which creates habit, division, attachment, especially attachment. If you drop number six, then seven doesn't arise. Then the will, the consciousness, the self-consciousness, does not arise. So dropping conceptual consciousness is the same as dropping projections. Then the attachment isn't there anymore. We haven't given attachment anything to hold on to. And once you begin to not feel attached, to not own your house in the way that it feels like we do, then it becomes much easier to not be projecting. Number seven's attachment to an external world is a perception of our own mind. And that's the cause and the support of the Alaya Vijnana. So the more attached we become to what feels like an external world and is actually our internal mind at work, that causes our accumulation of and attachment to a self and a world. That's all made up. It's all a fantasy. Fantasy that we're living. So that's basically what I brought tonight. There was one thing I wanted to read out of here. But I just said it, so that's even better. So are there questions? Comments? So we were going to talk about our own lives as this relates. So from that point of view, what do you know? Ron?
This particular part of the pretty convoluted, especially when they're discussing the types of consciousness, and he's asking, what is the Bhagavan speak of getting free from conceptual consciousness and how the seventh form of consciousness? And it gets very abstract because the notice, you know, so, well, he doesn't even talk about so many things, but he's talked about the sixth, seventh, and the eighth, and the seventh is the will. That's the one that it's a little bit elaborate.
Well, if you think of it in terms of your own body and mind, and just understand the first five, and then add on this, that we become aware, which is that first consciousness. And from this awareness, we become attached to things. And through this attachment, then, we become a self, you could say, a kind of mixed up idea about ourself. And what he's suggesting is if you don't create that self-consciousness, that then the others become not problematic at all. They don't exist in the same way. Free of it. Don't have to worry about whether there's free will or not.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah, you say get rid of the conceptual.
Yes.
And then, since the other one depends on that, it will be gotten rid of.
Yeah, so then you experience life in a much more straightforward way. It's just whatever happens, happens.
It's very nice. It's just a line of...
It's complicated.
It's complicated.
Yeah.
So they love this sort of thing at that time and place. You know,
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Brett?
Actually, I have a question. So I guess the way I basically understood it was that we have two ways of knowing One is sort of pure perception, and one is our interpretation of what we perceive. Would you say that's basically correct? What the two ways of knowing?
Yes.
I'm not really convinced, based on my own life experience, that those are two separate things that can be taken apart. I guess, like, for example, I guess what I was thinking off the top of my head was, like, how there's this sort of blindness where there's nothing wrong with your eyes. Your brain just doesn't know how to interpret what your eyes are seeing, but you're still blind. And maybe even when you have some hearing loss, or when you hear words coming in and out, often your brain will make the words just based on, like, what it kind of sounds like and what you know. And so to me that sounds like they're all mixed up together, what you perceive and what you think you should be perceiving. But they were, but I'm not really convinced they're two different things.
Well, I don't think so either. I think that is the subject of perception. So perception by itself is just information coming through. Mm-hmm. We're just taking it, and we have a feeble system, and sometimes the system doesn't work very well, so it doesn't get all the information. And in that sense, that's just one thing. But then we take that information instantaneously and make something of it. And that's the second thing. And that's the thing that he's suggesting we don't have to do.
I just don't know if we can't do it. I accept that maybe you should always keep in mind that it's faulty, but
yes.
I don't know that we can even perceive anything and not.
I agree. This is trying to create a sense of two things happening, which are really one thing anyway. It is metaphorical. Yeah. Yeah. Very.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is talking about, like, us breaking things into the dichotomy of good and bad.
Yes, and up and down and in and out and black and white. That's what we love to do. That's how our brain is made to do. And it's where we get in trouble. It's when we're making judgments all the time that are creating a dream world that doesn't exist. It's just all happening in our mind. It's not out there.
The same. Yes, he's saying, you know, get rid of the conceptual conscious body. Okay, it's this, and this, and this. Oh, yeah, and then it looks like that, this, and this. And oh, yeah, now I got it. Just
yes.
Stop doing that.
Yes.
And then you get to this kind of lower self consciousness, which is a deeper, rather really. Almost a
not-self-consciousness. That's right. And that's the point, that the self that we're making up is a made-up thing. And it gets in our way. It gets in the way of our depth. It's got fear in it. It's got all kinds of disarray that is unnecessary.
a very good practice.
It is a very good practice. Highly recommended.
I've been trying to do it.
Yeah.
Several months with varying degrees of success.
That's great. Well, that brings up something that I wanted to mention that I talked about on our Saturday sit. We sat all day on Saturday, and that was the beginning of practice period, our ango, which will last until the end of our sesshin in the middle of August. So this is our time to tighten up our practice, do some more, do some more sitting, studying, working with the Sangha, supporting others, and at the same time doing less that's just a kind of waste of time. Trying to support our own self and our own life and our own practice as one of a Sangha and as an opportunity to cultivate and nourish the life of practice and the depth of practice. There are many things that are possible to do, memorizing the Heart Sutra, memorizing Hakuin Senji's little poem about enlightenment, or the Sandokai. There's lots of things like that. Or just making one even short little sutra a study for the whole time. You can practice by writing it, or just sit with it, carry it around with you all day, line by line, so that it's not just scanning through a written material, but taking it inside. You can make the precepts your focus, and do that with the precepts. Take one precept and make it your practice for a whole week, or a whole day. So in our tradition, we don't sign a contract with the teacher, but we do try to see the teacher one-to-one at least once during this period, and more if that's possible. And I will try to make myself available for tea or for meeting over a meal or whatever is possible, including here during the sits on Saturday. So I hope everybody participates, and I hope everybody takes at least some time for the sit at the end, for the sesshin. It's Jikoji is a special place. It's was founded by our teacher, my teacher, who is your grandpa. So it has the essence and flavor of this lineage. So do give this some deep thought and see what comes up for you to do to deepen your practice, to help yourself and save all beings. So it's 8 o'clock.